fitter, happier. A program about your health for your health.
Good morning and welcome to Fitter Happier. We spend about a third of our lives sleeping. If you're 30 years old, that's about 10 years of sleep. Whether it determines how much coffee you need in the morning or the ability to fight back the yawns, a good night's sleep is vital to our daily routine and health. Joining us this morning to dive into the world of sleep is Dr. John McLaughlin, respiratory and sleep physician at Fiona Stanley Hospital. Welcome, John, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So, John, you're very passionate about sleep. Can you tell us about what you do and how you found yourself in this line of work?
Yes, I am. Look, sleep's an interesting area. I started back in the 1980s when sleep disorders were only starting to become realized, and I was training at the time. And then in private practice in South Africa, we suddenly realized that there was this increasing need for people to know about sleep and have their sleep problems sorted out. So I really got thrown in the deep end and have learned over the last, 30, 40 years in this area. What do I do? Well, largely I see people. I talk to them. I talk to them about how they sleep and the consequences of how badly they sleep to work out what sort of sleep disorders they may have. I examine them, and then either we treat them from there, or very often, if they might have sleep apnea, for example, we'll do a sleep study where, strange enough, we watch them when they sleep. You know that story, every breath you take? Well, we do that overnight at the sleep laboratory.
That's fantastic. And I think you're right. You know, there is such a high increased demand for people that are wanting to know about their sleep. I know for one, sometimes I spend a lot of time on my phone before I go to bed and have problems with my sleep later on.
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
I know. It's not good at all, hey. Scientists don't fully understand why humans need sleep, so much sleep. But from your perspective of a sleep physician, why do we need sleep and why is it so important?
Yeah, so that's an area that's becoming increasingly understood, although it's still fairly grey. And there's some very obvious ones. Back in the 1960s and 70s, there were some studies, not studies we wouldn't do today, where people deprived animals, mice and rabbits, of sleep. And over a period of time, if they were sleep deprived, they died. So clearly there's something fundamental about sleep that is necessary for life. We all make our own experiments over the years where we sleep deprive ourselves. In other words, we go to bed late, we get up early, we party all night, and we suffer consequences the next day. And we all realize we can't function properly without sleep. What people don't always realize is it has other things. So if you don't get enough sleep, you can't think properly, you can't make decisions properly. So there are also a number of people in high functioning jobs where they're making poor decisions because they're not getting enough sleep. Memory is really important. Sleep's really important for memory. When you're sleeping in certain stages of the sleep, we know that the good memories are laid down and the not so necessary memories are taken out. It's a bit like the nerves get rearranged, a bit like pruning your roses. So the memories that are really important for you get consolidated and the others get pruned away. Also, problem solving is interesting because there was a study some years back where they gave people a mathematical problem that was somewhat challenging, but not too challenging. And they asked them to try and solve it, and most of them couldn't. And that night, half the group were only given 4 hours of sleep, and the other half were given 8 hours of sleep. The next day, none of those who were given 4 hours could solve the problem, but almost all those who were given 8 hours could solve it quite quickly. So clearly something's happening. Once you've given a problem, your mind works on it overnight. The other one that worries me, and I think it's really important today, is that there were several studies shown both in children and adults that if you give people short sleep, and I'm talking only 6 hours a night on a regular basis, you see people gaining weight, progressively gaining weight as their sleep is curtailed. And we now know that if you're sleep deprived, there are hormonal changes in the body that, one, make you hungry, and two, make you lay down that weight. And so it compounds the problems.
It's interesting how, you know, just sleep in general has so many effects on, like you were saying, weight gain, your memory, things like that. It's really a fundamental thing, which is why I want to ask, let's break down what sleep actually is and, yeah, what is it?
That's a hard one.
Yeah.
Interrupt me as I go because it could take a while. So most, a lot of people think of sleep like a light switch. You know, you turn it off and you turn it on. You turn it off, you go to sleep, and you turn it on when you wake up in the morning. It's not like that. It's more like a roller coaster. So as we're falling asleep, we drift in and out of sleep, which is why so often, you know, you might say to your partner, "Hey, you stop, you know, wake up, you were snoring," and your partner will say, "Well, no, I was still awake," because it's not a complete on-off phenomenon. We drift in and out of sleep, and we tend to have a low activity sleep for the first short part of the night, and we get into slightly deeper sleep. And then usually after about 60 to 90 minutes, we go into a dreaming period of sleep, or called rapid eye movement or REM sleep. And then that cycle persists throughout the night. And most of us will have 5 or 6 of those cycles over the night. As the night goes on, we have more and more of the dreaming sleep, which is why often if you wake up in the early mornings, you're aware that you've been dreaming. And in the earlier part of the night, we have what we call the slow wave sleep. Slow wave is a sort of deeper sleep before the dreaming sleep, where everything in the body is pretty serene. The heart is stable, the breathing stable, the person's quietly asleep, and everything looks pretty good. That occurs more in the early part of the night. Fascinating about that is that as we get older, we get less of that. And as we get certain diseases, Alzheimer's, things like that, for example, we get less of that deep sleep as well. And it seems that the memory and the restorative parts of sleep seem to occur in that slow wave sleep. The dreaming sleep is even more interesting because if you look at the brain waves in the dreaming or REM sleep, the brain looks like an alert brain. It just looks like an awake brain that's doing a lot of work. And yet the body is absolutely quiet. And we know that in that dreaming sleep, the muscles in the body from the neck down tend to be partially paralyzed so that you can have your dreams, but you don't act them out by and large unless there's a problem. So it's a bit like having your own psychotherapy at night without actually doing all the actions and things that are going through. And you can relive memories and work things out. So it's a fascinating area, and we could talk for hours about what exactly is sleep. But clearly, in that process, the brain clears a lot of byproducts that have built up during the day, a bit like the kidneys do for the rest of the body.
There you go. So it's something that it's multifaceted, really. There's heaps of layers that you can go into, but something that is, you know, good for, you know, our respiration, and when we wake up, we're sort of refreshed and, you know, better off throughout our day. And you were touching about the slow wave, which is something that you said we don't get enough of that kind of sleep cycle as we're older. 4 in 10 Australian adults don't get good quality sleep. So what factors can affect sleep?
Oh, so many, huh? And, you know, we used to say in the early days that if you've got more than 3 children or more than 2 jobs, you've got bad sleep. But there's so many things that impact. I put a lot of blame on Thomas Edison, who was said to have invented the light bulb. He didn't. He just made an efficient light bulb that was affordable to mass produce. But he also invented the gramophone. And those two things have changed our lives immeasurably. So if you think before we had lights and records and things, people would go to bed when the sun went down, when the candles ran out, and they'd wake up in the morning. Now we keep the lights on for all hours. We have music playing. We've got the gramophone equivalent to the day, the telephone, the phones and the tablets that we read at night. And they all are impacting our quality of sleep. They're reducing the amount of time we have in bed to sleep. And are interfering with our ability to get a good sleep. The phones and tablets are a good example because they have a blue light in them in the background. And that blue light is very sensitive. The eye is very sensitive to that. Now, one of the things that regulates our sleep-wake cycle, because all of us have a normal, natural sleep-wake cycle, which is a bit longer than 24 hours. It's about 24 and a half hours, for example. And we use the sunlight in the morning to keep our sleep-wake cycle in sync with the day. Now, the blue wave light affects the, it gets into the brain, into the eyes, and works on a nucleus just behind the eyes, which changes our melatonin secretion in the body. And that shifts your sleep-wake cycle. So if you're lying in bed or reading your iPad or your phone or whatever it is, you're getting that blue light in, and it's actually shifting you to want to go to bed later and wake up later. So it's shifting your sleep as you go. Then, of course, we're living in busy cities where there's light around us. We've got sirens going, cars going. All those things interfere with your sleep. Medications can do it as well. There are a large number of medications and obviously non-prescription drugs. Marijuana significantly affects sleep, and so does alcohol.
There you go. So there's heaps of factors that can affect our sleep. And what resonated with me especially was the, you know, iPads and tablets and phones and things like that. You know, I go from, working on my laptop to working on a computer, or here at the station as well, we have computer screens that help us with radio, and then going on my phone again. It's something that, you know, it's not just what I do like when I wake up and when I go to sleep. It's constantly throughout the day. So I guess my kind of only break time is when I do sleep. So it's remarkable that it would have an effect on, you know, my overall sleep, and of course health impacts as well.
Absolutely.
I want to know, what is sleep apnea and how is it treated?
So sleep apnea is one of the two commonest diseases that we see as sleep physicians. The other one's insomnia, but sleep apnea is something that has been around a long time, but really only came to our attention in any big way in the 1980s. But effectively what it is, and it's largely but not exclusively relates to increased weight, particularly weight around the neck. And so as people fall asleep at night, the upper airway narrows and so they start snoring. And so a lot of people snore, about 50-odd% of men and about 40% of women snore. So in itself, that's not a crime. But as the disease gets worse and as the weight piles up, particularly in the upper airway, what tends to happen is that snore, the airways narrow more as you go into the deeper sleep. And from the snoring, the airway actually blocks off. So you might notice your partner snoring and then stop snoring. And you think that's good, but actually it's not good because they're not breathing properly and they're not getting oxygen to their brain, and their chest is struggling to help them breathe. So it's a bit like being choked from time to time. And then the body realizes there's a problem and wakes you up, and you go back to sleep and snore and choke again. And this choking can go on throughout the night, and we measure it in the sleep studies, and we see people very frequently stopping breathing 30, 40, 50, 60 times in an hour throughout the night. And that has major impacts on them. So it's every time they wake up, of course, they're losing sleep. So it totally destroys their ability to sleep. They wake up really not having had a good night's sleep. And on top of that, the choking events cause the oxygen to fall and increase the risk of heart attacks, strokes, heart failure, and other problems.
Oh, wow.
The treatment's fairly simple. If you can get in early and lose weight, most people will be able to get on top of it. And that's the bit that we often neglect. Stop smoking, reduce the alcohol, which have impacts on sleep and sleep apnea, and lose some weight. But for many people, we need to do more. And we do a sleep study to confirm that it's sleep apnea, because the other things can look like it. And by and large, we will treat most of them with a device that I think most people know now, CPAP, continuous positive airway pressure, which is a simple mask that fits over your nose or nose and mouth and blows air gently through your airways while you're sleeping to keep them open, to stop them blocking off. And it's very, very effective for most people.
That sounds almost horrifying when you were talking about the choking kind of aspect of it, and then being able to wake up and that kind of cycle repeating itself. Can you tell us a little bit more? You touched on it just before you started speaking about sleep apnea, but what about insomnia and what is that? And can you explain a little bit further?
So insomnia. Insomnia basically is a problem of either not being able to get to sleep or stay asleep. Look, we all have insomnia at some stage. You know, my father dies, I don't sleep well for a while, I've got some bank-related problems, I can't sleep well for a while, and that's quite common. Most of us will have episodes like that, and then we'll get back to normal sleep. But people who've got long-standing insomnia that goes on for months and years, find it hard to get to sleep. So they'll be sleepy, they'll get into bed, they'll be really feeling sleepy, get into bed. The moment they're into bed, they're aroused, they're wide awake, and they just can't sleep. And they lie there, tossing and turning, thinking about problems in their life, thinking about how they're not going to function the next day because they can't sleep. And the more they think about it, the less likely they are to sleep. There was a guy years ago, Viktor Frankl, who said a lovely thing about sleep. Sleep is like a dove that sits in your hand. As long as you ignore it, it'll stay there. But as soon as you try to grab it, it'll fly away. And sleep's like that. The harder you try to sleep, the more difficult it is to get to sleep. And it causes significant distress. People feel really, really distressed by it. As they get less and less sleep with this, or appear to get less and less sleep with this, they find that they don't function well in the daytime. They get depressed, they get anxious, they get irritable. And it is probably the most common problem we have. The challenge is to recognize the short-term insomnia that will go away on its own, the long-standing one, and to manage it and to understand what triggered it and what is keeping it going and help people to get over that. In the past, it was largely treated by doctors giving people sleeping tablets, which helps you get to sleep for a while, but doesn't actually fix the underlying problems, the psychological and other problems that are driving this. And over time, those tablets stop working, and people become addicted to them. And we now know that some simple behavioral changes and psychological changes can help people get back into a normal night's sleep. And although it's quite expensive to see a clinical psychologist, there's more and more online versions which will do a simple treatment for insomnia, which most people can access these days.
There you go. So a lot of, the thing is, sometimes when I go to sleep, you know, thoughts kind of come into my head and it's hard to sleep and that kind of thing as well. I want to know a little bit more. You were saying, there's psychological treatment, things like that as well. What are sort of your tips and tricks to getting a good night's sleep? So if, you know, there's factors in our head that we're thinking about or there's, you know, other problems, you know, with sleep apnea and things like that. What are some good tips and tricks on your end that you can recommend to our listeners, which will be beneficial for them if they're trying to go to sleep?
Sure. Well, obviously, the most important thing is the vast majority of people don't have a problem with sleep. So if you don't have a problem, don't do anything. It's fairly straightforward because, as I said, the more you think about sleep, the less likely you sleep. So if you don't have a problem, don't worry. If one of those people gets into bed, goes to sleep and wakes up in the morning, that's fine. But if you are one of those people who's having a problem with a lot of worrying and things like that, my simple tips are, firstly, have a regular sleep-wake cycle. Always get up the same time every morning, despite how long you slept the night before. But that keeps your biological clock in sync with the day and will tend to settle things down. When you get up in the morning, try and get some sunlight in your face. We're lucky here in WO. We've got lots of sun. In other countries, people have to use special lights to do that. But here, we can get outside and get some sun in your face for half an hour in the morning. That will help reset your biological clock and lift your spirits. The next thing is make sure you're having enough time to spend in bed. You need about 8 hours on average to sleep, so make sure you're getting about 8 hours. Now, if you're getting into bed and find you're not sleeping, don't lie there awake trying to worry. Because the longer you lie there tossing and turning, you're sending your mind your the signal it's all right to lie there and not sleep. So in people who are doing that, what I suggest is if you get into bed and you're not asleep within about 10, 15 minutes, don't watch the clock, just roughly, get up and go to the lounge room or something, read a book, do something calming until you're ready to go to sleep, and then go back and keep trying that. But don't lie in bed. Just keep repeating that until you do fall asleep. Now, to start with, it could be a couple of hours before you actually fall asleep. Still get up the same time the next day and keep doing that. After a while, your body will become a bit sleep deprived because you're not getting enough time in bed and to sleep. And as you get more sleep deprived, your normal function will take over and will start you sleeping. And you should then start getting a good sleep-wake cycle going. It's important not to lie there worrying because we want to give our minds and our body the thought that we're going to bed only for a couple of purposes, sleeping and sex. Anything else we should do somewhere else outside our bedroom. Obviously, keeping not having too much having too much caffeine generally, and avoiding caffeine in the late afternoon, evening, and if, ideally not having alcohol at night before you go to bed if you're a poor sleeper. Although it makes you fall asleep more easily, and then you wake up later and can't sleep. Those are the general tips, but there's a lot more specific things we can give individual people, and there's information elsewhere people can find about that.
There you go. So heaps of information about sleep. Thank you so much for joining us on The Record, John. We appreciate your time here.
It's a pleasure. It's always nice to talk about sleep.
Thank you. That was John McLaughlin from Fiona Stanley Hospital speaking with us about his experience as a sleep physician and why a good night's sleep is so important for our health. Like he was saying, getting off your phones before bed and reading a book may ease your mind before bed, as well as you can, he said to definitely check out some more information, and I'll give you the website for that. So it's sleephealthfoundation.org.au, or check out the Healthy WA website. So that's healthywa.wa.gov.au.